but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I was talking with a teacher friend of mine just a few minutes ago, and it got me thinking about what we've learned this college football season, this year, in this cycle. You know, because kids will come home from school, and what do we say to them? I say this to my kids all the time. What'd you learn today? Tell me one thing you learned today. Or if they, as they head off to school, I will say to my kids, learn something today. I walked over to the elementary school. Youngest daughter is 9. I think that puts her in the 4th grade. Does that sound right, Stephen? 9, 4th grade?
Yes.
Am I a bad dad? Yes, she's in the 4th grade.
That sounds right, yeah.
I think once you get to the 3rd daughter, it's like moms who fill out a baby book for the first baby. You know, you fill out that baby book for the first baby. You're all excited about it. Fill out every page. You have photos. It's got, you know, a lot of... Oh, this is when baby took their first step. Baby's first word was ball. Or dad, or mom. Oh, there's nothing that pisses a mom off more. Because the mom's there like, I carried this child for 9 months. I literally made a human being in my body. And I brought this child into the world. And then the baby's first word is dad. There's nothing worse, right? And it's so true. But first baby, you do the baby book, and you fill out everything, and your baby's first step, baby's every milestone, you know, baby's first word, baby's first friend. You do all of that stuff that that is all the firsts, and you fill that out, and then the second child comes. And you buy the baby book for the second child, and then you fill out like the first few pages because you got some time to do it. But, you know, some middle children, you know what I'm talking about. I was second in the batting order in my family growing up. I have a baby book. It has my name in it. It has my birth date and weight. And then it kind of just falls off the cliff somewhere in that first year of life. And it's never, nothing else is filled out. I should send that baby book back to my mom and be like, you have some catching up to do. What are you doing? But it's like that. It's like when you get to the third daughter, and I'm on daughter 3, the first daughter, you know, you're kind of overbearing. You're at every sporting event. You're watching closely. You're giving advice. You get into the car with your kid after a sporting event. You're giving her all the pointers. The second daughter, you've learned a little bit. You're maybe letting her talk first when you get into the car or letting her lead that conversation. The third daughter, you're just like, you know, did you have fun today? You finally figured it out. Did you have fun today? But what did we learn? And I always say that to my kids. Go learn something today at school. So I'm dropping the 9-year-old off at school the other day. Take her all the way to the door. And I said to her, learn something today. And I wasn't trying to be flippant. I wasn't trying to make a joke. But the teacher who was standing at the door, like monitoring the door, looked at me and laughed and went, aha, learn one thing. And I was like, no, really, I want her to learn something today. And I don't even care if it's reading, writing, and arithmetic. Like, just learn something about yourself in school. Learn something about your friends in school. And my kid has great friends. They're all like, I look at her friend group and I see these kids that are all healthy and smart and they're good at sports. And I go, yeah, like these are the kinds of people I want her hanging out with. Like, you know, this is her crew. And, you know, this is her board of directors, so to speak, at the age of 9. And so you look at that. But I want to take that a little further today. In the last year, you know, like watching our children grow up, we have watched our sports teams develop. We have watched them change. We have watched them evolve. We have watched them mature. And the evolution of people and the vulnerability that people have in being able to talk about, okay, this is how I've gotten better. This is how I've changed. This is how I've struggled in the last year. It's been on my mind lately. And I am looking at these sports teams like the Oregon Ducks, and I'm looking at Oregon State, and I think Oregon State's a great case study. And I'm looking at the college football ecosystem. We're going to talk a lot about that on today's show. We're going to get a visit from Rob Akey, the new interim coach. Is he the new coach or is he just the interim coach? He's the interim coach at Oregon State. And Rob Akey's going to be joining us and talking to us about what he wants to do with this football team. And Oregon State's trying to salvage a little bit of their season. But amid that, I want to talk about what we've learned. And I'd love to open the phone lines. Duck fans, Beaver fans, Blazer fans, people at large, what have you learned about your sports enterprises, let's just say, in this season of life? 503-417-7575 is the phone number across the great state of Oregon and Southern Washington. Appreciate those of you listening in Medford on the Ace Sports Radio or in Bend on the Ticket. Shout out to Bend. We've been getting some calls from Bend lately. For those in Newport listening on Fox Sports Newport on the Oregon coast, or Fox Sports Eugene in Eugene, or 1490 AM KSKR in Roseburg. Certainly Klamath Falls, 960 AM. They were the just the second affiliate to join, and naturally on 750 The Game. I want to hear from you, wherever you may be. And by the way, I don't think, Stephen, have we gotten a call from Fox Sports Newport, like from the Oregon coast? Because I know we've been on there for a little while, but I can't remember a call, like some fisherman calling in, somebody just off a boat, somebody vacationing on the Oregon coast. Can you remember a call coming in from Fox Sports Newport?
No. I know we've talked to like a fisherman, but I don't think it was from Newport.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a reach.
Yeah, I think
we're reaching a little bit.
I think you're right. I think we need one.
I think we need our first caller from Fox Sports Newport to be able to be, like, if it's Bob, Fisherman Bob, or whoever. Why is it a fisherman? Why can't it just be a normal person driving through Newport? It could be. It could be. So if you're listening in Newport, Oregon, on Fox Sports Newport, I want to hear from you. But wherever you may be across the state of Oregon or Southern Washington, you can call in. If you're streaming the show, bless you. If you're streaming the show from just down the street, bless you. I love you. If you're listening, wherever you may be, 503-417-7575 is the phone number. I would love to hear from you. What have you learned about the Ducks? What have you learned about the Beavers? What have you learned about sports in this season of sports competition? I will go first, but I want to hear from you. The Oregon Ducks, I have learned that, you know, we talk about money, and money drives a lot of things in sports. Money drives the ability to go out and get better players. They're sharing revenue, better coaches, seemingly better coaches. You can recruit better. You can brand better. You can do all these fancy videos every Tuesday that you put out, or every Wednesday that you put out. But in the end, you've got to coach it up, and you've got to find it when you're on the field on game day. And by find it, I mean between the ears and in your chest. You have to find that level of competition in a way that we have often looked over at professional athletes and said, oh, they're going through the motions. They're making money. They're in a contract year. Oh, so much of this game is about motivation. Who wants to be here? We are seeing that in college athletics. And I thought I saw it last Saturday at Autzen Stadium as Oregon was playing Indiana. Oregon has better recruiting classes. Oregon has more disposable income. I rode the elevator up to the press box with Phil Knight. He was in the, you know, he's sitting, like, standing 2 feet from me. I talked to him. I'm like, they are so lucky to have Phil Knight at Oregon. But then they got out onto the field, and I got to be honest with you, all of the tenacity, all of the will, all of the ingenuity, all of the vision, and the edginess that Phil Knight needed, if you read Shoe Dog, his memoir, you know, all of that stuff that made Nike great, Oregon didn't really channel that against Indiana. In fact, it was the other way around. Kurt Cignetti and the Hoosiers, you know, we had a bunch of guys that no five-star recruits on that roster, a handful of fours, mostly three-star guys, and a coach who looks like an insurance salesman. No disrespect to insurance guys, but, you know, you look like Kurt Cignetti. You could be the guy on the sideline. Like, if he wasn't coaching football, what would he be doing? And I have Cignetti down as like maybe he's the foreman, a project manager at a, in a construction site or something like that. But the dude coached it up, and Indiana came to play. And it kind of like the knock on Oregon historically has been that the same kids that love the fancy uniforms and are blown away by the Xboxes at the lockers back in the day and the Nike Association, that those kids aren't necessarily tough, that those kids aren't necessarily going to grind and have grit, you know, that X factor that George Plimpton wrote about, that those kids are going to be, hey, you got the best recruits, but you might not have the best competitors. And I felt like Indiana outcompeted Oregon. And I thought Kurt Cignetti outcoached Dan Lanning. So I learned in that moment, like you talk about, you know, the old adage, money can't buy everything. Money didn't buy Oregon the grit, and it didn't buy Oregon the will. And Indiana had it. Now, the good thing is that the Ducks know that in this 12-team playoff era, they can come back, and they can come back with a vengeance, as Ohio State did a year ago. There is a learning curve to a season now that didn't exist before. College basketball coaches probably know this better than college football coaches, because in college basketball, what is the aim? The aim, Stephen, is to get to the NCAA tournament and then be playing your best basketball once you get there. The aim in college football has always been play your best football every single week. Every week's a Super Bowl. You can't lose a game. That has changed. That calculus has changed, and Oregon is existing and now competing within that ecosystem. And I am fascinated to see how it plays out. But I think for a Saturday last weekend, as Indiana came to town and College Game Day came to town, it was the first time I looked at Oregon and went, huh, they didn't have it. You can't buy that. You have to find it from within yourself. That's what I learned about the Ducks. For the Beavers, second thing. Look, there are a faction of people out there that think Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State, should be fired. That he hasn't done a good job of hiring coaches, and he promoted Trent Bray. It now looks like it was the wrong move to make. They gave up on Bray. They are now pivoting and going in a different direction. But for Oregon State, the thing that I learned about Oregon State was that fan base is far more powerful and far more influential than I maybe gave it credit for a couple of weeks ago. Because I think that Oregon State's fan base pushed Scott Barnes into a position where he had to do something about Trent Bray. He didn't want to do something. He didn't want to fire him. He didn't want to admit he made a mistake. He wanted it to work out, make him look smart. We all want to be right when we have, you know, we bet on something or we predict something. And Scott Barnes bet on Trent Bray and continued to bet on him and doubling down, even though he was 0-2 and then 0-3 and then 0-4, and he came on the show and he bet on him again. But that fan base at Oregon State, you've got a little more clout than I gave you credit for. You're not just a fan base. You're a lobbyist entity. You are a powerful thing. And in the same way that I think Mariners fans forced the Mariners to stop just trying to play just above 500 ball and go out and make some moves, and they made some moves that make that offense really good, I think that the Oregon State fan has the potential to cause change at Oregon State in that same way. That's what I learned. Stephen, what did you learn about the Ducks or the Beavers?
I've learned that it is one big, giant machine now in college football. Before, I felt like it was, you know, if you had the boosters, if you had just the money involved, you could win. And then I also felt like in other situations, if you had the right coach, you could win. I feel like nowadays, with everything that's going on, you need the right coaches, you need the right boosters, you need the right athletes on your team, you need the right support system around you, you need the right fans, you need the right stadium, you need the right TV deal. You need everything right now in college football to be successful. And it's really, I mean, the haves and have-nots have never been any bigger. We talk about, you know, there's so many teams that can win a national championship. I don't know about that. But we're looking at teams like Indiana that have, you know, really invested in their football program. They've got the right coach. They've got the right backers supporting them in everything that they do. And now they're successful. You look at Oregon State. Well, maybe they didn't have the right coach, and now it falls apart. When Jonathan Smith was there, he had the right coach. They had the right support. It was good. So I feel like nowadays, usually – I feel like you could have missed on something, whether you missed on a player, you missed on a coach, whatever it was, but you could still survive by kind of, you know, piecing it together with duct tape and stuff like that. Nowadays, I feel like you have to hit home runs everywhere if you want to be anywhere successful in college football. It is such a big disparity between, you know, the number, you know, one team in the nation and the number 30 team in the nation, when I feel like, you know, in years past, it wasn't as big as it is now.
I am looking at what's going on with the Big Ten Conference. And there are a lot of tentacles to this thing where they're, you know, they're taking on some private capital. And for people who don't know, the original proposal, it's not a new concept, is that they're going to say, hey, we're going to create this new entity. We'll call it Big Ten Enterprises. And we're going to put our media rights dollars into it. Like the media contracts with Fox will go into there. Any kind of sponsorships, any kind of licensing, any kind of revenue we can raise will go into this thing. There are 18 members in the conference, but we're going to have 20 shares. And so share number 19 goes to the conference itself, offices, and share number 20 goes to the private entity that would be funding the money. And right now it's the UC system and the money that the UC system wants to put into the Big Ten. And you know, people out there are going, well, wait, why would they want to get in business with a private fund that just is looking to invest some money and is betting on the Big Ten Conference and thinks the Big Ten where they want to put their money? And Bob Thompson, the former president of Fox Sports Networks, is saying, well, the reason you do that is you don't want to be in business with your media entities because they won't pay the way they would pay if you have a third party invited. Meanwhile, there's all kinds of tentacles here because not everybody's in favor of this. USC has some misgivings. Michigan has some misgivings. I have misgivings about it. I'm like, what are they doing? Why are they selling all the way out? Isn't it enough for these colleges to say, hey, we're still colleges and we play football? Why do they have to be like, hey, no. We're football programs that happen to go to college or be associated with a college. USC and Michigan among those who have misgivings, but Indiana's doing some weird things. Steven, you called it to my attention, the story out of Bloomington, where the student newspaper at Indiana, the advisor's been fired because the student newspaper came out against the private equity or the private capital investment, and they are now ceasing to publish the student newspaper. Students are saying this is censorship. The university is saying, oh, it's just not in the budget. This is not good. There's a lot of nonsense going on out there around this stuff.
It really is. And look, I understand why, like you said, you know, Bob Thompson makes the idea of why it would work out to get this money now. And I think that this deal is about to happen because I don't think Penn State can get the money that they needed to get the buyout for James Franklin.
Damn right. They're looking at James Franklin's buyout and going, hey.
Like, we kind of need this money right now here. Let's sign up for some money right now. It's such a short-term like problem solver, where I think in the long term it's just like, look, you're just gonna be giving away money for no reason. Like, you're gonna be making a ton of money anyways, but now you're just giving money to this investment firm, and that's what they do. They take your money from you. So I hate all of it. Now you look at Indiana, like, they're really good. They're number three in the nation. They just went at Oregon. A lot of people are looking at them and saying, well, they're a national championship contender. Go look at the betting odds. Like, they're a top five team in the sports books to win the national title. And now, you know, Indiana students are calling out, like, look, we shouldn't be getting in bed with the private investors, and Indiana wants to censor it. They don't want you to post that. They want to talk about, oh, look, we got homecoming coming on. We play Michigan State.
Propaganda. Everyone's watching this. They want propaganda.
It's all propaganda, and that is big-time sports. You know, we've seen the Blazers do that certain type of thing with a lot of different media members in this market, you know, even you. And I think, like, now we're looking at colleges, and it's like Dylan Gabriel said, John, he warned us. It's professional sports now, but it's such a big business thing now. Nowadays, it is kind of sad, but that's the way we're going to it, and I hate the fact that if you have a different opinion, you're not allowed to speak it. Or if you think differently from big, you know, big media or big school or big company, a lot of times they want to censor you. Everyone should have their own opinion, and it's okay to think differently. Even if you think it differently, you think they're wrong, it's okay to think one way.
I've always said that on this show. Like, I think it would be boring if everybody agreed with me. I think it would be a boring show if every caller who called in said, oh, I totally agree with you, or Steven, you said, I agree with you, or all the interns, oh, I totally agree. I hate that group think. I want everyone to think for themselves. That said, I have strong opinions, And I think that the Indiana, IU is making a big mistake here. Even the perception that they are censoring the student paper is bad. It's bad for the university. It's bad for the mission of higher learning. It's bad for the brand. It doesn't look good. They have the advisor coming out saying he absolutely was fired because they were trying to censor student content. I get it. Indiana didn't like some of the things that the student paper is publishing. But guess what? That's part of education. This isn't like having a substitute teacher in the classroom and kids acting up. There's something wrong with that. Like, you have to do something about that. But if you have students on your campus, and the students are saying, hey, you've taught us that journalism is a good thing, and part of that is a little bit of free speech and the Fourth Estate and the ability to kind of offer a dissenting viewpoint, say, hey, this deal's maybe not good for the Big Ten Conference, and the university wants to shut down that messaging? Come on. Give me a break. That's ridiculous. Let's go to the phone lines. Paul is in West Lynn, Oregon, from the mean streets. Paul, what's up, man?
Very mean. I'm still waiting for something positive regarding private equity. I know it makes money for the investors, but they've infiltrated healthcare and physician groups and dental groups, and now they're in college. And there's nothing positive when all this money starts taking over things that should be more virtuous, like education and healthcare. But I digress.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm ashamed, embarrassed, and frustrated that I just learned this rule recently, that in golf, you always have the option for stroke and distance. For example, if you're in the middle of the fairway and you land into a greenside bunker and you may not be the strongest bunker player, it might take you a couple to get out, you can always go back to where you last shot it from, take a one-stroke penalty, and redo that shot, saving yourself possibly 5 or 6 strokes if you're me.
Yes, there you go. You learned that. Stroke and distance, golf rule. One-stroke penalty, though. Player returns to where you hit your previous shot, and you play again from that spot. Now, it's mandatory for an out-of-bounds or a lost ball, but always available for a player in a difficult situation, such as going into a bunker. And so I think you were helping a lot of people, Paul, today by offering that up. Thank you, man. There he goes. Paul learned that. See? That's something I didn't think we'd get on today's show. This show takes me in surprising places on a daily basis. I appreciate everybody who's here. Rob Akey, the new guy. Is he really, though? Goes from special teams coach to interim head coach. What's Rob Akey going to do with the Beavers? He's coming up. I want you to leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Telling you, I never thought we'd get golf advice in the opening segment of the show. And it makes sense, though. There's probably some dudes out there that are golfing today. Probably, what did you learn? What have you learned lately? We opened the phone lines for that in segment one. I want to ask our next guest what he has learned. He is the interim head coach at Oregon State, joining us for his first interview. Rob Akey joining us. Appreciate you making time. Where are you today? Set the scene for us, coach.
I'm in the stadium. I'm sitting at the office right now and we just got done cleaning up, looking at some of the practice film from today and getting some things ready for tomorrow. And it's an ongoing process that we're a part of. And so I'm sitting in my chair right now, getting the opportunity to talk to you. And I just am curious, is it, were you taking a shot at me when I, they put me on hold there and I'm hearing this long commercial about growing some hair? Was that taking a shot at me or what?
That's the name of the show is the Bald Faced Truth, Coach. Like you know, it's on brand for us to say that. Like, you know, I'm not saying you need hair. You do need a win. Like, what would it mean to get a win? How hungry is that locker room?
It's starving to death, and that's that it's really important, I think, and that's what we. You know, the coaching staff here, we want more than anything is for these kids to have an opportunity to smile. There hadn't been anything to smile about, and it was obviously a tough weekend in so many numerous ways. But they being able to see them accomplish some goals and make something happen, make a play that they hadn't, and be able to celebrate together once they get done playing a game and feel good about what the results of that game were and be able to be rewarded for the work that's gone in because they've been busting their tails for a long, long time. And that means the world to everybody around here. And that's what drives us all here every day.
You mentioned practice film. I want to go back early in your career. Let's go back, like, you know, Northern Arizona, 1995, Washington State in the late 90s, early 2000s, Idaho. You get off to the NFL with the Vikings and in Washington. You've been to some places. You didn't always have practice film to evaluate. How has having film of practice changed the job of a head coach or a coach in general?
Well, what we're able to do with video anymore is it's absolutely unreal. We get we're blessed to have a number of different views that we can see them. So it gives you a great opportunity to help these guys work with their techniques and work with actually finding out where the fits are and some different deals like that. But it's a tremendous teaching tool, and it's awesome. It goes a long ways from the days when I was playing at Weber State, and it was if you had film, it was a VHS tape, and it was viewed from so far away you didn't even know which dot on the screen was you. So it's come a long ways, and it's pretty cool, and it's a great tool that we utilize, and it keeps driving us.
All right, how do you keep kids engaged when they're not getting the reward, they're not getting that thing to feel good about, they're not getting that win? How do you keep kids engaged to that point, or in your role as you step in at this point of the season, how do you get them sort of refocused?
Well, the fact of the matter is we're in a situation right now. Well, number one, so you start with the first part of your question. Being able to see what the difference is and how they get the job accomplished and what they need to do to finish a job, whether it was my block on a play or whether I was in the right depth in a route or if I had the right drop or whatever it is, being able to see those things and we're able to put those tapes together where they see where they do it well. And then, the things that hurt us, why did that happen? And if we're able to get those things cleaned up and make that be a better habit for them, that's what I think drives a lot of these guys, because it does matter to them. They want to see themselves succeed when they're out there playing in front of God and everybody. That's the work goes in all week long, but it's on show out there and on game night, game day. And, that's what they want to have success with and they want to have a see. So that being able to create those situations so that, you build the habit. You've done it so many times, you can't help but do it on Saturday. And we're still, you're obviously always in the growing phase of that. That's what was kind of aggravating about some of the way some of these games have turned out, because we had, opportunities with a finish. We'd have had a couple wins early in the season. All you need is one of those. That puts a little gasoline on it, and that makes guys feel a little bit better. And things start to flow when you get a little momentum rolling. Well, that momentum hadn't happened for us. And then, with the emotion and everything that happened after, this weekend, then it's a matter of drawing on, we've only got five opportunities. As a player, I only have five opportunities left this season to be able to go out there and do something great. And we haven't had the final score the way we want to yet. We got five chances to be able to do it. And we've talked a lot about, the commitment that they have to each other and being able to build off of that commitment, because, they've been working their tails off. It was in the wintertime. It was during spring ball. It was over the course of the summer. It's in the nature of what they do every day. There's a great commitment to try to be able to finish something together and prove that they can make something happen and be able to focus on that. And that's where, that's where we've got to channel ourselves right now. And then the bottom line is, if I'm going to be a college football player, I've got a great love for this game. And so we get five opportunities this season to be able to even do this together again. And so being able to have a great time doing what it is that you love and build yourself there, it's your escape from what's going on in the rest of the world. Go use that to get to the final result. We've got to find our way to make ourselves smile again and have a great time doing what we do.
Rob Akey is our guest, interim head football coach at Oregon State. You're born in Colorado Springs, Colorado, 1966. Take us back.
Yes,
there. What brought the Akey family to Colorado Springs in the 60s?
Well, back in that day, my parents were both teachers. And so that's what got... brother. That's where we grew up. My dad taught at the rival high school, and that was a pretty cool.
All right, we got Rob Akies. Coach, you there? Your coach, your phone broke up a little bit, but you're back. You're back. Go ahead.
Oh, I understand. That's so, you know, they were both teachers, and that's where we grew up, and that was where I lived till I went off to college.
All right, so you grow up in a teaching household. What do you get out of that as a kid when you got two teachers? Because you're not alone. Dan Lanning's parents at Oregon, both his parents are teachers. What did Rob Akies get out of that?
Well, I think I was blessed to be able to have that. And you know, you learned that education obviously is important. You learned how to do things. You learned how to do things the right way. You learned that it was necessary to do it the right way. I also learned that, you know, I'd be lying to you if I was going to sit here and tell you that I love school. My brother was a lot better at it than I was, but I also knew that I had to take care of it or I was going to hear about it when I got home. And it was kind of, you know, you'd think it'd be a good deal with Pops teaching over at the rival high school, especially when we always won the rival game, during the season. I had to do that to make it easy for him, over there at school. But every teacher that I had, if something happened during the course of the day, he was going to know about it before I got home anyway. So it, you know, it was, I think growing up in a family like that, there's discipline and hard work and things like that we're able to do. And then I was, you know, had the opportunity to be able to work on the farm in the summertime, you know, working wheat harvest and things like that. And I think I learned some good things being able to, you know, how to work and you know, what it means to put in work and do things like that. And, you know, I know that's a lot of what I've drawn from. And, you know, the watching the relationships that my dad had with, you know, with students and, you know, hearing students come back to him years after that, you know, appreciative of what they gained from him. And, you know, and that's, you know, a lot of what we get as coaches, you know, we get the opportunity to be pops away from home for a lot of them. And it's pretty cool when you hear from, you know, a guy 20 years later that's telling you about something going on in his life or you're able to help him get a job or whatever the case it is. And I think, you know, learning how to, build those relationships and do things in a positive way, I'd like to think I got a lot of that from my folks.
You played at Weber State. They're now in the Big Sky Conference. You were a defensive lineman. You were a linebacker. I think you played a little bit of offense as well. You know, what was that experience like, that college football experience like for you?
It was awesome. It was the greatest thing in the world, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing to this day, because I love football. I love the game. But we had a great time. There was a group of us that played there at Weber State, came from all different parts of the country. It was a melting pot. It was a cool deal. And we were able to do a lot of good stuff. Our senior year, we won more games than they'd won there, made it into the playoffs, and did some cool stuff. And that was it was a life that I loved and I knew. And I knew if I was going to be honest with myself, the NFL wasn't calling for me to come play for them. I had success. But, you know, I wasn't quite the same. So I knew I wanted to coach. I knew I wanted football to be a part of my life. And I had talked with, you know, Coach Price and then the coaches that I had played for. Mike Zimmer was one of them, too. He was our defense coordinator. That this is what I wanted to get into. So we got done with the playoffs in December. Went home, saw the family for Christmas. I came back and I started working, helping. I was like the assistant defensive line coach. And then after that first year, did 1 year doing that, and then Coach Price got the job at the head job at Washington State, and they made our offense coordinator the head coach. And at the ripe old age of 21 years old, I was now the defensive line coach at Weber State, and that was where my career started. And it's I didn't know what my life would be like without football, and there wouldn't be one. It's been a great passion. It's an awesome deal.
You've got kids of your own. I think Jack and Daniel. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, so is it Daniel got into coaching himself? I believe is that right? I have that right?
Yes, he has. He's working on the staff with us here. He started doing some things. So when he was in, when I was coaching in the NFL, Jack was playing junior college ball out in California, and Daniel was he finished high school and was actually had his freshman year with us when I was out at the Redskins, and he would always work for us in training camp. He worked for us, and then that year that he was working at the junior college there, I put him to work for us at the Redskins, and he'd go in and he did some video stuff for us. They had him, you know, they mic'd the the quarterbacks and the centers in the NFL. And so we'd go through them and we'd get a lot of code words and different things like that that we could match up with film and find out what some checks were going to be and things like that. And he dove into that and did a great job. And at one point in time, I think he thought he wanted to be a GM, but after he was around a little bit more of that, and he obviously grew up in the house, he wanted to coach. And so then he started out, he was working as a student assistant. He went to college at Washington State, worked as a student assistant with Mike Leach. He was on offense there. And then after we beat them in the Sun Bowl, I brought him and had him on the defense side of the ball. And he'd worked special teams a little bit at both those places also, but those were the roles he was playing. And then, we had there was a change opened up here right at in the summertime here that there was an opportunity, and so he was able to come in and work as a special teams analyst. So it's he's taking another step in his coaching career, and it's been pretty cool to be able to have that be able to do these things together and work at it. It's a pretty awesome deal.
Rob Akey is with us, Oregon State's interim head coach. You got a game coming up this week, and what do you see on film when you look at Lafayette?
Well, I look at the guys that got, I think they've got a lot of confidence in what they're doing. Their opening game was against Bowling Green, and that was, a team that is a little higher level than them. It was in that MAC conference. But then they've been able to put a streak together where they've, they hung 62 points on Bucknell, this last weekend. So they've doing some things pretty good. They work a couple of different quarterbacks, and they're a good football team that obviously is, very excited about being able to come out here and play against Oregon State. They're going to get, it's be like a Super Bowl for a team like that. They want to come in and try to make some things happen. So they're going to be gung ho and that's all great, but we've got a bunch of guys that need to go feel good and smile again, that are anxious to compete and they want to go out. And I think probably take some frustration out on some different things. But, it's a good football team that's coming in here, and we're going to have a good football team that's ready to get after them.
Are you a pep talk guy? Will you give a pregame talk to the guys?
I think the work gets done during the course of the week, and I think we do a lot of it that way. I think I'll have a couple of nuggets for them, but no, I'm not going to have to try to amp them up at that point in time. My goal is that the energy and things that we've done, we'll have them ready to go. They'll be we should be coming out of there pretty good, ready to get going.
All right. Do you have a book on your nightstand? Do you have, do you have something you've read? Do you have something you watch, lean on? What in your own private time away from football, what are you doing?
Well, you're talking about when we're not in season, when I'm away from football.
But you can't be football all the time, can you? I know coaches try, they're maniacs. I understand that. But what do you do that's not football related in the course of your day? One thing.
Well, if it's during the season, there's really nothing that I do during the day. I go home and I'll hang out with my dogs. But it's late at night when I get home and do that. They get excited. They're still happy to see you, so that's a good thing. During the course of time, it's the time you spend with the people around here, and the focus is always on being able to have the next day ready to go and things like that, or another film that I could have watched or something else that maybe I need to see. So, I'm really not blowing smoke when I tell you during the season, that's really where the time is. And then if it's, as you get done, you get done with your game, or you're waiting for one to stop, start the night before, maybe you're watching the games that are on TV. I'll do that and see where guys are playing at other places or the game that's on, because there's always a situation gets created during the course of one of those games that you're watching. And you talk about how, you think about how you'd handle it, and that's created a lot of conversations I'll even have, or either over the phone or with text with other coaches on the staffs that, hey, we would do this, don't you think, or whatever. There's things like that. It really does consume you as you get going. Now, if you're talking about we're in the summertime or something like that, you'll find I like to get out on a golf course. Spend time doing that. I like to get the old green egg fired up, and that's something that I really enjoy a ton. Love to get out and do a little more fishing than I've been able to. But those are things that I like to do.
What kind of dogs?
They're labs.
Okay.
Got a yellow one named Buster and a chocolate one named Chip.
Those are proper dogs and proper names.
No, like you love that. Them. They're pretty wild, too. They get after it. They're fun to be around.
That's a real dog. All right, Rob Akey, we'll talk to you next week. I appreciate you making time for us. Good luck to you. Go get a W.
John, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. I look forward to talking to you again, and go Bees.
All right, there he goes. Stephen Vaughn, a little bit of a change from the weekly interviews that we have done with the coach at Oregon State today. My big takeaway is one sentence. They will play for him. The Beavers will play for that guy. I don't know if it works like over 5 weeks, but this Saturday, Oregon State will play for that guy.
I think you're right. Yeah, because he is full of energy. Like,
yes.
You know, throughout the interview, he had energy. When I answered the phone when he called, he's like, "Hey, how's it going? Let's do it. Let's come on." And he's like, "Whoa, this isn't Coach Bray on here right now." But you know, I think as an interim guy, you probably got to bring that extra energy to keep these guys motivated. And look, he's keeping it simple. As he said, John, he just wants to see the guys smile. He wants to see the guys smile as they walk off the field in a victory. That's all he wants. And you know, that personality is contagious. So I'm with you. Like, it does seem like at least for a week, or maybe even 2 weeks, whatever it is, you know, these B players are going to be playing hard for this guy. You know, I can see how if he's a full-time head coach, it might be a little different. But as an interim guy, you come in, you got that energy. Man, how could you not be excited to play football? And look, and keep it simple, man. And I think that's all that they need to do. I think we've overlooked everything with the Beavs, and we've had to because they're 0-7. They got to just get back to normal things. Make it simple.
Go beat Lafayette. Go beat Lafayette.
That's all you got to do,
crying out loud.
All you got to do.
It's such a simple thing. This is not playing Oregon or Texas Tech. This is not playing Cal even, or Houston, or even Appalachian State. It's Lafayette at home under a new regime. Rob Akey, the new interim coach, or the interim coach at Oregon State. He is in relief of Trent Bray. We will see what the Beavers do. Leave it here. Our Big Splash is coming up.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Fearless prediction. Oregon State wins their first football game of the season on Saturday night against Lafayette. I also think that Oregon State in the next five games, Stephen, I think they will go 3-2. What about you?
I'll take the under on that. No, I don't think they go.
They're going to get Lafayette. They're going to get Sam Houston at home. Sam Houston's bad. That's a bad team. That is a bad team.
I don't think so. I don't know if they can sweep the Sam Houston Tulsa two gamer. And with the way Washington State's played,
they're not going to beat Washington State. I think Washington State gets them twice, but I think they'll get Tulsa, Sam Houston, and I give them 3-2.
I'll give you that they have. I think four. I think the game at Wazoo is probably going to be really tough. So I would give you they got four winnable games. Right, Lafayette at home, Washington State at home, Sam Houston on the road, Tulsa. But you couldn't win at App State. Like I don't know. I can't.
You can't pick them. You don't trust them.
No, not at all. I mean, Tulsa has a first-year head coach. Like, they still have stuff to play for. They're still trying to build their program. So, no, I can't picture it.
I just think I'm giving them Lafayette. Do you agree on Lafayette?
I do, but there's a part of me that
wants last week
to,
we both thought they could win, and you've learned something, and I haven't.
Yes, there's a part of me that wants to put a pizza bet on Lafayette on the money line. Just saying, there's a part of me, I'm not going to do it, but there's a part of me that says I should do it.
They're either, if they lose to Lafayette, they never win again. They don't win again.
Never
they go
again,
0-12. But Lafayette and Sam Houston, I think, are wins. Now, can they win one of the Washington State games or the Tulsa game? I'm going to say yeah, but I don't blame you if you said 2.5 was the over-under. I'll say over, you say under.
Yeah, I would take the under. I can't trust this team to go on the road and win any game at this point in the season. Like, even I know Tulsa's not a great team so far this season, but I can't see Oregon State going to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and winning the game.
Rob Akey, they'll play for him. I'm not saying that, you know, they're going to he's going to be the coach beyond the end of this season. I don't think he is. But I think this guy can get his team to play one game, one moment, you know, forget everything that's happened. You want to go smile?
Not a math major, but I think there's somewhere around 365 days in a year. And 12 of those days, so that leaves us somewhere about 353 days. 350 days, you get Christmas and Thanksgiving, you get to breathe a little bit. Well, not Thanksgiving. You get to breathe a little bit. And all the rest of that time is put towards those 12 opportunities, so hopefully it produces a few more opportunities. And they've put a ton of work in. And, you know, we haven't had the result that we want to have just yet. And my goal, our goal, is to see them be able to smile coming off a field again and be able to achieve what they came here to achieve and accomplish some things and feel good about what they've done.
A little momentum, a little lightning in the bottle, a little, hey, let's change the mood in the room.
I will say that. The mood is a lot more brighter today, I feel like, in Oregon State land.
Yeah. No, I mean, I got to be honest with you. I had more fun in that interview that I did in recent weeks with Trent Bray. Part of that is Trent Bray's personality. He's not, you know, I don't think it was what he's good at. I hear a little Bruce Barnum in Rob Akey as well. Just a little. There's just a little Bruce Barnum in him, you know, and he's a guy who coached at Idaho as well.
I did like that you're like, hey, what do you do for fun? I don't have fun, dude. It's football season, bro. Like, that is a Bruce Barnum answer right there. Like, you know, it's all, he's a football guy.
How about him, his names of his kids? Jack Daniel. I'm just saying. And then his dogs. He's got a chocolate lab named Chip. Come on. Chocolate Chip? Anybody else catching that? Yeah, that's where his mind is. So, you know, and here's the other thing. I'm not a math major, but I think there's 365 days in the year. You don't need to be a math major to know how many days there are in the year, you know? Like, come on. And is it a leap year? That's another question for Rob Akey. By the way, on tomorrow's show, it'll be Dan Lanning. We'll ask Dan Lanning how many days there are in the year and what's on his nightstand. Tomorrow's show. Be here for it.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Started the show talking about what you learned. What did you learn? What did you learn last hour? Rob Akey, we hadn't talked to him before, first time. Dan Lanning on the show tomorrow, Oregon coach. Here's what I like about Lanning. You know, back in the day, when we would have Mark Helfrich on the show, if the Ducks lost, Helfrich would never come on the next week. And I don't know if he was running from having to have a hard conversation or if he wanted to show people, no, I'm hard at work. No time for me to do an interview. You decide. I have noted that on the few occasions in which Dan Lanning has lost a football game, tends to come on the next time. So I'm going to give him credit for that. Oregon trying to regroup after a loss to Indiana. They go to Rutgers. I'm assuming that they are leaving on Friday, and they're going to make it like they're going to do the same thing they did in flying out to Northwestern for a football game and then turning right around and coming back, because Lanning's joining us tomorrow at 4:20. He'll be live. So they're still in Eugene on Thursday at 4:20. I'll say that. All right, we normally do the 5 at 5 at 5 o'clock, but, Stephen, we have something going on tonight at 5 o'clock. What is happening tonight at 5 o'clock?
Oh, it's the Seattle Mariners, baby, up 2-0 in the series over the Blue Jays. They are hosting T-Mobile Park, 5:08 first pitch, so we got the very end of pregame starting at 5 o'clock, so we're cutting a little bit short to get us out to Seattle for the Mariners.
All right, let's do that. We will get we'll get the Mariners going. And see if we can't get the Mariners lined up for a sweep by winning this pivotal game 3. I always call them pivotal because every game counts. Counts the same, whether it's game 1 or game 5. But it feels awfully pivotal to go up 3-0, doesn't it? 3-0.
Is it a must-win for the Blue Jays?
Yes. You can't go down 3-0. This is a must-win situation for Toronto. And the last time we saw the Mariners in this situation in the ALDS, they did not play well and forced a Game 5, remember? So they had a chance to kind of put the nail in the coffin there, and they didn't. And so I'm curious to see how focused they look. If they get Game 3, then this is a foregone conclusion. They will win it. But Toronto needs this game. They have to have this game. It is a must win. But we normally do the 5 at 5. We won't have a chance to do that today. So instead, we're going to do the 4 biggest stories at 4. It's the first ever 4 at 4. Steven, let's do it.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
I did not have time to do the imaging for the 4 at 4.
Yeah, so I was a little surprised you didn't say the 4 at 4.
That would have been shocking. Well, what's not shocking is the NBA opens up their regular season in about a week, John, and the NBA today has reminded teams to prioritize addressing inappropriate fan behavior at games. A memo was sent to all 30 teams today, and the league told teams that it wants, quote, consistent and vigilant enforcement of the NBA fan code of conduct to deter and address fan misconduct at NBA games and events, end quote. Now, of course, a lot of stuff happened last season. Remember when Luka Doncic got traded to the Lakers, Nico Harrison and everybody, yeah, a part of the Dallas Mavericks organization was getting a lot of yelling at them. So that was a really big thing. Also, during the NBA playoffs, when the Timberwolves are taking on the Golden State Warriors, Draymond Green said he was getting some racially charged comments directed towards him. Mm. We had it in golf with the Ryder Cup, remember?
Yeah, terrible, ugly, gross. Gross.
A lot of bad comments towards Rory McIlroy and the European team. So the NBA, in their memo, told teams that arena staff must be trained to identify behavior that violates NBA rules and to respond proactively. So the NBA is trying to get out in front of this and trying to warn some people. But again, it just goes back to just be a good person and let's not put people down with words.
Don't out yourself as someone who's not normal. The Ryder Cup was hateful. It was embarrassing. You go back and you look at Jaron Duran of the Red Sox, who got heckled by a fan about his mental health struggles. Remember that? He got caught in the Netflix series. That fan got ejected. Two other fans at Yankee Stadium. Remember the World Series light game last year where they pried the ball out of Mookie Betts' glove? You're not supposed to be part of the story. You're supposed to be there enjoying the game. And part of the enjoyment of the game is everybody around you being able to enjoy the game. And I often will find that that is the biggest thing. It's become a hot topic, fan behavior. I don't think as a fan of a NBA game or any other sporting event, you have anything more than the right to be there and enjoy the game, but not mar the experience for anybody else. If you are fighting, if you are throwing objects, if you are attempting to enter the court, you're immediately ejected. If you are not consuming alcoholic beverages in a responsible manner, get out. If you are non-compliant with arena staff and security, get out. I think you have to be courteous, and I think I hesitate to use the word professional as it pertains to fans, but I think it is kind of your job. Be professional as a fan.
Just don't make it personal. That's my thing, is don't attack these people personally for what they believe in, for what they are, for anything like that. Attack them for being on the other team and say, like, look, I want my team to win and your team to lose. I'm going to boo you. I'm going to try to heckle you. But don't make it personal. I think that's the problem, is people take it way too far and they take it for stuff that's off the court, off the field. Just start booing, man. It's the same exact thing. You don't got to call people names. Yeah. Just boo and cheer for your own team, man.
I had this guy he was a fan of the Blazer games. And it was during one Blazer game, he got a warning card. Have you ever seen the warning card that the ushers or the security staff will give out at the NBA arena?
I have.
It's this little warning card. It's got the NBA logo on it. And the guy was holding it up as kind of an example, of, like he was proud of it. It was
like
a badge of honor.
Yeah,
he was happy about it. And I left that interaction with this guy thinking, what a bozo. How could you be like, oh, look, John, I got a warning card. And I was not surprised, Steven. It was like a year later. I saw a story in the news where this same guy was going to prison, and it had nothing to do with like what he did at an NBA game or whatever. And I was like, okay, this guy's not a rule follower in general. Don't get a warning card. Don't be that guy. Don't be disruptive. Don't ruin anyone else's experience. Like, that, to me, it falls back under the category of, can we all just be normal? Act normal. Sorry to say that, but it needs to be said.
Number two.
Well, a former Portland Trailblazer has decided to retire just 1 week before the opening of the NBA season. Guard Malcolm Brogdon, he's on the New York Knicks, John. He has actually announced he's going to retire today. But the thing is he agreed to a one-year deal with the Knicks just a little over a month ago, September 12th. Signed a one-year deal and said, nah, I'm good after, you know, 1 month and week going into the season. Now, the Knicks are reportedly stunned that Malcolm Brogdon has announced his retirement, and they were planning on him being on the opening night roster and a big part of their bench. As, of course, we saw in the playoffs last year, the Knicks didn't really have a bench, so he was needed. But this is not new. I remember back in the NFL, right before the season, Amari Cooper with the Raiders. He decided to hang it up just days after signing a one-year deal. He's like, nah, I'm good. Like, I don't have a problem with you retiring. Like, I don't like the timing, though. Like, it couldn't
you wanted to, it's not professional that he's retiring a week before the season?
Like, couldn't you have figured out on September 12th, like, I really don't want to play?
Okay, yeah, I'll play the other side of that, though. But what if his expectation is, yeah, I'm going to sign. I want to grab that roster spot. I want to take the contract. And then as the season is approaching, he's like, mentally and physically, I'm just not into it. Does he, you know, like, this is like, you know, we always tell our kids, you can't quit. Like, you sign up for something, you see it through. Does the same hold true for a professional athlete? Or would you rather have a 32-year-old guy who's going, I can't do it. I'm mentally not there. I'm not in a good place. This isn't going to go well. Would you rather have him going, I'm out? Put yourself in his shoes. Like, I'm sure when he signed the deal, he thought he was going to do it. Like, didn't he?
Yes, but I don't know. I feel like you could have known. Like, if you're a month out from the season, you could probably tell, like, my heart's not in it.
Did he do this to the Knicks for a reason? Was he mad at him? Because that was another thing I thought, is this passive aggressive? Like, you didn't give me the deal I wanted, and therefore, goodbye. I don't know. Former Rookie of the Year, former Sixth Man of the Year. What's his legacy? What's his, is he underwhelming or?
Oh, no. I mean, second round pick was the NBA Rookie of the Year. Only reason he got Rookie of the Year is because Embiid was hurt for so much that he, like, couldn't really be eligible to do it. But I would say really good career for Malcolm Brogdon, a 10-year career. And I thought when he was with the Blazers for, I believe, two seasons.
Five teams he played for.
Yeah, I mean, he was like a true, he's one of those true professional guys. And I always thought he was a really good player. So I'll think of him fondly. Definitely a good career for him as a second round pick.
Moving on.
Number three.
Third in our 4-at-4.
Well, John, the Tennessee Titans yesterday, they announced that they are firing head coach Brian Callahan as the first head coaching casualty in the NFL. But this is not new, as the last four number one overall draft picks in the NFL, if their quarterback has had their coach fired in the first season in the NFL draft. Last year, it was Caleb Williams. Remember, Matt Eberflus got fired at the end of the year. Bryce Young, 11 games into his career. Frank Reich was fired as the Panthers head coach. And then Trevor Lawrence, of course, had Urban Meyer as his head coach. He was fired as well. And now Cam Ward joins that group as well. So if you didn't have the number one overall pick and you draft a quarterback, you're going to be firing your coach within that first season. Now, 2022, the Jags had the first pick in the draft. They drafted Trayvon Walker, not a quarterback, so it doesn't necessarily count. But the last four quarterbacks, John, first year, end up firing their coach. I feel like they should do it. Shouldn't they do it the other way? Like, you should hire your coach before the draft that you really want, not go into the year with the coach that you feel like is a lame duck coach.
Well, the reason they're drafted number one is they were bad, right, the year before.
Right,
so all
saying,
they're like, saying is they didn't fire their coach the year before. They waited until after they picked their QB.
But isn't that a selling point? Like, hey, we have the number one overall pick. Come coach our team.
Oh, yeah, it could be.
Like,
could
you know,
be.
Like, if you love Cam Ward, you get to coach that guy. Like, I feel like it should be a selling point rather than let's go into the season with this guy that we think stinks and then fire him.
I also look back at Marcus Mariota's early tenure in Tennessee with the Titans. And is same thing. Like, everybody who picked him and was part of his early drafting and all that, they were all gone after a while. And coaches will say that too about the general manager. They're athletic directors in college. Like, you don't want your AD to get fired. You don't want your AD to leave. I remember Mike Leach, you know, when he was at Washington State, he said he looked around. He said nobody who hired him was left anymore. That was part of Leach going, yeah, I think I'm going to go to Mississippi. Although the SEC was calling his name.
Number four.
Finally today, the four at four.
Well, number four, John, has to do with tortillas, as Texas Tech and Kansas today got fined $25,000 each because of a fallout after the game because of fan behavior. Now, what happens is at Texas Tech at the start of the opening kickoff, the fans throw tortillas on the field for some reason. No one really knows like the origin of why they do it, but they do it. But the Big 12, they voted in August to change the rules where about policies about objects thrown on the field. Teams get warnings, and then they get 15-yard penalties. Now, Texas Tech actually got two 15-yard penalties last game against Kansas. And then after the game, Kansas head coach Lance Leipold went up to Joey McGuire and started yelling at him about the fan behavior. Coach McGuire then said, you could read his lips. He said, Coach, I can't do anything about it. You want me to do something bleeping about it? And then after the game, Leipold complained that the officials should have done more to stop the fans from throwing the tortillas. He also claimed that a pocket knife got thrown at a Kansas staffer during the game as well. But Texas Tech has submitted footage that says that is inaccurate. We still don't know what the actual facts are. But after all, tortillas thrown in the field, coaches fighting with each other, Kansas, Texas Tech both fined $25,000. I don't know. I mean, how cool is the tortilla throw? Is it like a cool thing to watch?
I've seen it. I've seen it up close.
Is it fun?
It doesn't
sound fun.
But you've seen like these basketball programs where they throw the toilet paper at the first point scored in the game, and they have to clear the court and everything. It is a distraction because the staffers in Lubbock have to run around the field and pick everything up. And right,
so the staffers pick it up, not like the refs or anything?
No, the staff, they have a bunch of, they're ready for it when it happens. And so they all kind of run around and very quickly grab it. But this whole idea that I saw, you know, the quote was that somebody's going to get seriously hurt. Leipold said that.
Well, maybe maybe he's talking knives here.
He's talking about tortillas. If the tortillas are the main thing being tossed from the crowd, and you can pick it up in the equivalent of a TV timeout, I don't really see the problem with it. But Kansas is saying, hey, this whole tortilla thing is coming with knives also being thrown. Somebody threw an axe, a dart. I don't know. But we're talking about tortillas. I'll tell you what else. Those tortillas can fly. We're talking about corn tortillas, Stephen. Those are mini Frisbees. Those are like floppy little Frisbees. And those fans are all liquored up prior to that Texas Tech game, and they have nothing else to do. If you've ever been to Lubbock, Texas, I'll tell you what you notice. I stayed at a hotel that was probably three blocks away from the stadium, and I was there for a couple days. I looked out the window, and I thought, this is like Matt. Like any time now I'm going to see like Matt Damon walk by in a space suit, like pretending he's on Mars. Like they're going to be filming a movie out here. It looks like you're on Mars. Like the clay is dark and reddish. The tumbleweed is out there. There's nothing for a whole lot of acreage. There's also, it's really hot. And then, so those fans, if this is all they got, I say let them have the tortillas. Let them have some fun. But Kansas not happy with it. By the way, Deion Sanders had a problem with it last year and said, you know, that fans were throwing objects at that game at Texas Tech. So McGuire had to get on the live mic and tell the fans to stop throwing objects. What should happen? Like, it goes back to fan behavior. What are they doing? Throwing things. And the fans in Fresno State fans, they get the same rap. Hawaii and Fresno have this kind of rivalry that nobody talks about. And part of it is born because when June Jones was coaching at Hawaii, and Nick Rolovich could probably back this up, when June Jones was coaching at Hawaii, he claimed that a fan in Fresno threw a screwdriver onto the field after the game as he was trying to walk off the field. And so the Fresno fans, they seized on that. And the next time Hawaii played there, of course, people threw screwdrivers. Like, it was like, you can't do that. You can't draw attention to that. And you can't also throw a screwdriver at a college football game. That is not becoming. But what is it about fan behavior? Let's talk about that because it came up here twice in the four at four. NBA cracking down on fan behavior, saying, hey, come on, don't make it personal. You got fans in Texas throwing things onto the field. What is it about going to a sporting event that makes people misbehave in that way? I would love to hear from you at 503-417-7575. Give me, like, you know, what you think it is that goes on at a sporting event that makes people feel like they can do things they wouldn't normally do. Like, out in regular society, you wouldn't throw a knife. You wouldn't even throw a tortilla at somebody. You wouldn't hurl, a slur at somebody crossing the street, and you shouldn't. Have we lost our civility as a society? Is this a sign of the times? Is this mob mentality that happens at a game? Is this, hey, there's too much alcohol now? These schools are all selling alcohol every corner of the stadium. They're open the tailgate early. They've made it a party. Parking spots are going for $150 at college games. They have created this atmosphere that is like football palooza, and it's fueled by alcohol. Is it that they are undercutting the staffing when it comes to security? What is going on with fan behavior? Is it that fans in seats in stadiums and arenas have moved closer to the court because ticket sales have predicated that, hey, we can get premium seating, we can charge fans for sitting that close, but also they can get a bucket of popcorn and drop it on Russell Westbrook's head?
Is it social media now? Because people feel like they can talk trash on social media, they can just do it in real life. Yeah, it has no consequences.
That loss of civility. 503-417-7575. I think it's kind of all of the above. I think we have watched people lose their way, lose their compass. We have watched social media create this environment that, yeah, you can tweet at anybody and say anything. And there's almost no accountability. And I've seen people, like, sometimes people use a burner account, but sometimes, Steven, like, I had a guy that knew that my children were halfies, half Asian, half Italian. I had a guy who used a racial slur aimed at Asian people, and he sent it to me, and he said, "Did you know your two kids are, you know," and he used the slur. And it didn't bother me. It was the first time in my life that I have had somebody, you know, direct a racial slur towards me or me and my kids. And I was like, but I looked at the guy's profile. I was like, what a weird thing to tweet out. Like, who is this person who would do this? And the guy had a Bible verse and a picture of him and his kid as his profile picture. He wasn't even trying to hide. And I thought to myself, like, what level of anonymity must you feel to tweet out something that you know is inappropriate, and you're doing it with an account that's got your face and your kid's name and a Bible verse as in your profile? Like, what is it about people? I don't know if he was drinking, but can I blame that one on alcohol? Probably not. Just a loss of civility in general, and the false anonymity that you feel you're at arm's length. Do you feel that way at a game? Like, you've seen people heckle players, Steven. Do they feel that, oh, I'm in the stands, I can say anything from my seat because I'm protected by that space between me and the player?
I think that is. I think you're right on that, is that it's more like, what are you going to do? There's a lot of videos out there nowadays of people just recording for no reason because they're allowed to. And people don't want to necessarily be recorded, but they just want to draw the attention and get people's attention and get a reaction. I think that's the big one, John, is like, my kids will do things just to get a reaction out of me. And I know they are. And I think some of these fans now, they've taken that and they're like, look, can I get a reaction out of this guy and post it on TikTok and make it go viral? Can I do that? And I think that has a lot to do with it as well. I don't know. I feel sometimes I do feel really bad for these athletes and all the stuff that they see and read and hear. Because it shouldn't be that way. It should be, look, I'm cheering for my team, and I am going a little, you know, I can criticize the opponents, but I need to be cheering on my team is the main thing.
I think I would love to hear from our listeners at 503-417-7575. You tell me what it's about. What have you seen? What have you witnessed? How ugly is it? What can be done about it? Can the league itself just be like, hey, we're going to have a quicker trigger with these things, and will that solve it? You got the bald-faced truth on this great Wednesday. We're going to lead you right into Mariners baseball coming up. But I'd love your phone calls on that subject. 503-417-7575.
Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
What's bad fan behavior rooted in? Probably a lot of things, if we're being real. Is there any one thing more than others? Do we have a loss of civility in our society in general? Are the teams selling seats that are closer than ever to the action, giving fans face-to-face interactions with players? Is alcohol a problem? The answer to this is probably yes to all of the above. I'd love your phone calls as the NBA is seeking to crack down on bad fan behavior this season at NBA arenas. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. We got a lot to talk about, including players and coaches speaking out about a variety of subjects. We'll have Punch It Audio coming up. But let's go to the phone lines. Dan's in Northeast. Dan, what is it? Is it alcohol? Is it the loss of civility? Is it where do you put the emphasis on bad fan behavior?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. That it's a combination of all these things. But I also think there's an elephant in the room, kind of. And I debated whether to call in and even say anything about this, because I really appreciate your continuing efforts to try to keep the show apolitical. And I'm not trying to upset that or derail things. So I'm just going to say an objective fact. We have decided as a nation twice now to elect the president of the United States, who has incorporated insults and belittling people and mocking and nicknames into his daily routine of communication. It gets political when we talk about whether or not you agree with that, but clearly a lot of Americans agree with that, because we said, yep, that's who I want in charge of the country. And I think it is an unavoidable and objective fact that if you make somebody who uses that kind of language routinely president, over time, it's going to have an impact. Now, I don't think he's the cause of it. And it's kind of a chicken or egg thing. Like, there's a reason. I would argue that that's a big part of the reason why he's ascended to the, you know, commander in chief. But I think we're fooling ourselves if we don't acknowledge that when you have a president who talks like that all the time, over time, people are going to gradually get the sense that that's okay. And I personally think that's a big problem. That's all I got.
Do you agree with Dan? 503-417-7575. Is there a political element to it? I don't even know if that's political, because I would go back even farther. All right. So I have been thinking about this loss of civility in society and seeing the parallel in sports as much as anything. Sure, politics, a presidential election, sure, it may mirror trends in society. Maybe it has to do with the fact that, you know, social media comes along certainly in the last 10 or 12 years and becomes more of a thing. Are we really talking about a tolerance for the way we talk about each other as it pertains to social media, extending to presidential elections that start to sound unpresidential and debates that start to stand unpresidential, or what is going on there?
We always have these conversations, John, of is politics and sports and sports and politics. Not that they've bled together, but there is not a fine line all the time now between politics and sports anymore.
Right.
And I think it has changed.
It gets harder. It gets harder.
It gets blurred.
To draw that line because there's a lot of gray area. And you have politicians who will insert themselves into sports stories or bounce in and out. Is this team going to the White House or not? Like, how's that not become a political story?
Trump wants to get L.A. out of the World Cup, or the World Cup out of L.A. I almost put that in the 4 at 4, but I didn't. Like, I decided I didn't want to, because I didn't care as much as I cared about the other stories.
Here's the other thing, though. I want to go even deeper. I want to go farther back. I think, like, I have thought about this a lot. There was this breakdown in our business world with the Enron scandal and then the mortgage crash. And there was sort of this, and maybe there's always been bad ethics in big business, but there was sort of this news cycle where we had some things that were happening in the business world that were like really sketch. And I thought to myself, oh gosh, we've lost sort of civility. People, you know, the people at Enron cooking the books. Same time, though, Lance Armstrong is winning 7 yellow jerseys and he's cheating. Barry Bonds got the cream in the clear. Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa are on Andro and whatever else. You've got this whole PED era in baseball and in sports. Yeah, people saying, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And I sort of thought, gosh, do we have a tolerance so much in our sports society that we're willing to look the other way because it's in the name of winning? It's Spygate. It's Deflategate. I mean, they're just trying to win. Bill Belichick's just trying to win. You know, the Clippers are just trying to win. And it's a very slippery slope. Very slippery slope. 503-417-7575. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what's up, man?
Hey, John, man. I wasn't going to call, Ben, but that last caller made the most vacuous comment that I have ever heard. He's going to blame the president of the United States for people's behavior. What he's saying is that people don't have free will, that somehow people are like automatons, that somebody from afar can push their button and they start reacting. I don't believe that. What he need to be blaming, first of all, is people's parents. You know, they raise these people from children. And so what their families didn't do, can't nobody else do. So if their families didn't give them instruction on how to conduct themselves and behave, that's not the president's fault. That's the family's fault. So anyway, I just wanted to make that statement, John. Talk to you later.
Yeah, I appreciate that viewpoint. Let's go to Hillsborough. Michael in Hillsborough. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hey, I'm going to give you my preface. I've been a referee in sports, mostly youth sports, for the last 25 years. And I will say this. I have no political affiliation. The last two and a half, three years, I've seen more parents get more, what's the word I'm looking for? They're a lot more
bold,
boisterous. Yeah, bold now. Yep. And you didn't see that before. And I do, in a sense, see a little bit more, I don't want to use the word racial epitome, but I think people are less afraid to say things now. And I think that one caller was correct, that I think politics does play into a point with it with the president, but also at the same time, as your last caller said, it starts at home, right? But a lot of times these kids see what parents are doing, and they're going to repeat it. And people are just getting more bolder now, I see, as a rep. And it's scary for us, and it's scary for the parents that are sitting there, and they don't know how to react, and they look at us sometimes.
You mean scary for you as an official officiating a youth sports event or game?
Yeah. It's like, what do you do at this point? I don't want to, you know, stop the game and jump in, because some of these parents are, you know, they're scary, you know, and just hearing what they say, and you're just kind of like, oh, my gosh, you know, and all you can do is just
give us an idea. Okay, take us there, because a lot of us don't get to see it, and I think the more sunshine we put on it, the better. What kinds of things are they saying?
Oh, some of it is when you see some of the kids out there that are either of color playing hockey. You don't see a lot of black kids play hockey, and you can hear some of the things that are being said. Mm. I've had parents come up to me, players from the other benches, and it seems to be more and more, I don't know, the kids aren't afraid to do it anymore, and the parents don't say anything, and you hear it in the stands. You have parents that come up and tell you, and I'm like, hey, look, I'm just roughing the game. You need to go to the director of the stadium or the arena and talk to them, because they don't pay me enough to deal with that. I'm just roughing the game. But at the same time, if it happens on the ice or on the rink, I'm going to say something to the players for sure. But you're seeing it more in sporting events, and I've heard it across the board. I'm not saying it's like happening a lot, but you hear a lot of refs say, yeah, some of the parents nowadays, some of the things they say in the stand is like, you know, borderline racial, you know, it's, and I think they're just getting more bold. And I think a part of it is, as I think as Ron was saying, is they see the president doing it. And I hate to say it, but I think that does play a role, you know,
I think too that there is an element of social media that I definitely think is involved in this, where people are allowed to sit back on a keyboard and say anything they want, and they're emboldened, and they think that, you know, they don't feel, I guess, ashamed, or they don't feel afraid to do it. I also think it's true that if you've got somebody out in the world who is, you know, being rewarded for having harsh opinions or being lauded for having harsh opinions, I do think it's natural. There's a lot of followers out there. There are a lot of sheep out there that will follow and follow suit, so to speak. But I liked some of what Mike said about, like, it starting at home. Because I think even if that stuff is true, even if you feel like you're insulated by the distance of social media, or I'm a fan, I paid it for a ticket, I can get to, I have the right to say whatever I want to say. I have the right to boo. I have the right to heckle the player. I have the right to say anything I want about this player. Even if that is true, if you've got the stuffing that was put in place by the upbringing that your parents gave you, I'm talking about your insides. If you've got that fortitude, if you've got the ethics, if you have the values, if you there's going to be a voice inside your head that's like, it's not cool for me to say this. Let's go to James and Eugene. James, go ahead.
Hey, so here's my deal on this. I kind of agree with Mike, but I don't, because unfortunately not every child out there or every person that's being raised is being raised by their parents. So in the same way that you can say it falls on the parents, but there's a lot of people out there, kids in general, that
don't have
parents. Like, yeah. So, I mean, at some point in time, it does become dependent on the people who are in leadership to toe a line of respect towards other human beings. And so, like what the other caller before Mike said, I completely agree with that. If you demean people and you talk like people are the worst people of all time, and you say it consistently, people who don't have that, the compass coming from a parent can kind of gravitate towards something like that. So, and also, that doesn't even have to just necessarily be with kids. That could be someone my age, 40 years old, who didn't have parents giving them the right tools to navigate our current society, to where now you see people that you might look up to saying things about other people, and it gives you clairvoyance. Well, if he can do it, I can do it too. Freedom of speech. So for me, I get both sides, but you can't just blame it on parents, because not every kid out there has two parents in the household. Right. Or even
But I mean, isn't that, I mean, I don't want to blame it, but does it explain if you don't have, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a parent, if you don't have that structure, if you don't have that upbringing, you're more susceptible to this stuff?
No, but it also falls on youth leaders. It falls on coaches. It falls on people who see a lot of kids out there that don't have that parental structure that need to be a light in their life to say, hey, this is not how we treat people. We're all people. And you know what? It could fall on just youth sports in general. And I think from what I see is that it is a joke when you see you go to a game and you watch your nephews or your whoever play, and you see parents and coaches and they're going at the officials. And there's a lot of stuff that is just cringy as hell to me that I just look at and I'm like, for real right now? And you can't blame that all on parents, but you can also look at it from a perspective of a loss of civility and that we do not treat people like we used to. And that's just my opinion, but hey, thanks, John.
But it's true too. Like I'll even go farther than this, because maybe the vantage point I have as a dad who's an older dad with my younger kids now, I might be the oldest dad at my kids' elementary school, but I'm watching the TV shows that are available to my 9-year-old now, and I'm comparing them to the TV shows that my 9-year-old watched, and that 9-year-old just turned 23. And it's a different world. There's different content. And I will overhear sometimes when she's watching a show the way that the characters are talking to each other. And I don't like the way that the characters talk to each other. I don't like sort of the tone that sometimes the characters on the show take with the parents on the show. I don't, you know, it stops me, because I go, I don't remember the oldest daughter watching shows like that. The shows that she watched, you know, it was right. You know, it was like 14, 15 years ago. There was a different tone to them. And I think some of that is society changing over time. And, you know, you may say, oh, it's social media, or I may say, oh, it's the way that leaders talk, or it's the loss of civility. I do think it's incumbent upon me to walk across the room and be like, hey, I don't want you watching that show. That's not how we're going to, I don't like the way those characters talk to each other. And I have noted that. Stephen, I don't know if you've noticed it, but you don't have that advantage of having a, you know, a former 9-year-old who's now 23 and going, oh, by comparison, I don't remember Caillou talking to his parents the way that, you know, the characters on the shows my kid are watching now talk to each other. And I'm like, uh-uh, that's not how you talk to your parents. And so we're not watching that show. But I'm not sure everybody has that perspective.
Well, and the thing is the access and the content is so easily accessible now, too. Like, you can watch it wherever, where I feel like back in the day, like when I was a kid, it was hard to get any type of like, you know, because you had to wait a week if you want to watch a show or, yeah, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, it's all right there now. It's all accessible. So, yeah, I think it is a little weird how, you know, we have gone about this whole thing of how to talk to people. And I think also the fact that, you know, the whole COVID shutdown with the schools, I think that, yeah, has been a problem with kids as well. Like, kids don't know how to necessarily talk to one another or play with each other. I think they're still recovering from that, which is so sad. I see that with my kids. Like, my youngest was—he was not in school yet. My oldest was in kindergarten when it just happened. They had to do the virtual school, and I still see kids at his school sometimes. How I feel like it has affected them because of that, because they just missed out on a whole year of just talking to other kids and interacting with them, and it's so different now. So people just don't know how to do it.
Yeah, the kids that during the pandemic had two parents who were on Zoom calls all day.
Yeah.
Lost a whole year or year, more than a year, and sitting on a computer screen themselves. They were not in a classroom. They were not in a structured environment. We got Punch It Audio coming up. I want you to leave it here. Plus, we're going to lead you right into Mariners baseball, the pivotal game 3 of their American League Championship Series coming up here on 750 The Game.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Do you blame sports wagering at all for the way that fans treat each other or treat players? How much is sports wagering wrapped up in this conversation we've been having, Steven?
I think it's a problem. I think it's a smaller problem that's growing. Like, if I had the percentage of pie, like a pie chart here, I'd say 10 to 15% probably right now.
Yeah, and I
but
do
that's
wonder.
It's probably up like 200 to 300% the last, you know, 2025.
Increasing problem.
Right. Yes.
Increasing issue, or increasingly part of the problem, I should say. Sports wagering, loss of civility, bad parenting, trends in society. Alcohol at the stadiums, I don't think that gets talked about enough. I think we kind of go, oh, it's obvious. People, when they're drunk, act like idiots. I see nothing wrong with having an adult beverage if you can handle yourself. An adult beverage or three if you can handle yourself. Have five if you can handle yourself. I don't care. It's your life. But don't have one if you can't handle yourself. And we see that more and more. I am so tired of the algorithm on TikTok and Instagram and wherever else giving me fights at sporting events. People punching up a row behind them, punching down, men hitting women, people wrestling, hair pulling, people in the bathrooms, fighting in the bathroom. If you're rolling around on the bathroom floor at an NFL stadium, fighting somebody while wearing a jersey on a Sunday, you have taken a wrong turn. Back up, evaluate your decisions, evaluate what you have done, if that's you. I think it's all of the above. I think, though, we've had some callers make some great points. When you have bad behavior modeled, you have to ask yourself, like, hey, how, you know, don't be a follower. You have to have that as a mantra. When you see bad things happening at Little League sporting events and youth sporting events, we can't really blame sports wagering for that. I blame bad parenting for that. I've been like really surprised, delighted even, as my 9-year-old is playing soccer and lacrosse and other sports, the younger kid, I'm kind of trying to figure out when parents lose their mind. So far, at age 8, 9, whether it's volleyball or soccer or whatever, the parents on both sides in the gym have all been mostly just cool. Mostly cool. Like, I don't hear parents yelling at their own kid. I don't hear parents challenging the referee who's like 15. Nobody's following the coach to the parking lot. Mostly cool. the parents that I do see kind of pushing the envelope are generally, and I'm going to make a generalization here, generally on the younger side. And I go to myself, you know, I I'm one of the older dads here now with the 9-year-old, and I wasn't always the older dad. And I'm looking around at the parents who are maybe like 20 years younger than me, and I'm going, yeah, there's some growing up that's going to happen here. But I think it's mostly been directed positively. And so I'm just kind of wondering at what point it happens, because I know it happens. I've been there. I've been to the puppet show. I've seen the strings. I know that it changes at some point, and I know that people suddenly start going, kill the umpire. You know, I'm waiting for that to happen. I have seen that happen. It's a great conversation, and I'm glad we're talking about it. Mariners coming up. Game 3 of the American League Championship Series. They lead 2-0 over the Toronto Blue Jays. They're hosting this game in Seattle. Cal Raleigh talking about the trades at the deadline and how they rallied the Mariners team.
You know, you can say whatever you want, but the actions speak louder than words, and it kind of excites the room when you're going out there, and because it's the message is clear, you know, we're going for it. We got our team significantly better, and you can look at this year as well, going out and getting Gino and Naylor and, you know, doing things like that. It's just, it's exciting, and it really, you know, brings that clubhouse together, creates a lot of energy and buzz, and that's what you want heading into the last 2 months of the year.
It's true. If you've ever been in any kind of business, in any kind of setting, I don't care if you, you work at a real estate firm or you work at a radio station, or if you work in the clubhouse like Cal Raleigh does for a Major League Baseball team, when you see management going for it, when you see them investing in the product, when you see them supporting the mission the way it should be supported, man, it is a beautiful thing. And, you know, I approach this radio show because I want to win every day. And I can tell you, like, it means a lot to me when I see investment from above in the product. When I say, saying, what do you need? What can I get you? What do you need to be successful? And that's what the Mariners front office has done for that clubhouse. Do they have the best manager in baseball? Is Dan Wilson the best manager in baseball? He's not. He has not at any point of the playoffs been the best manager at the field that day. Like, I think, you know, I've watched him and I've gone, gosh, he's at such a disadvantage. But his front office gave him everything he needed to win. He's got the pitching. He's got the moves at the deadline. I have to think Scott Servais, who got fired, you know, is looking at this year's roster going, hey, I could have used that. I could have used that talent. The Mariners are positioned to win, and Cal Raleigh's at the center of it, and he's benefited as much as anybody because the lineup around him has gotten markedly better. The Mariners are on the cusp of something special. They are trying to get to the World Series for the first time in their history. They've never done it. They're the only Major League Baseball team to have never got there. They are America's team right now. People in Seattle are excited. We've got the game coming up right here on 750 The Game. We'll be back tomorrow. Dan Lanning on the show tomorrow.